Jesus answered by telling a story. There was once a man travelling from Jerusalem to Jericho. On the way, he was attacked by robbers. They took his clothes, beat him up, and went off, leaving him half dead. Luckily, a priest was on his way down the same road. But when he saw him, he angled across to the other side. Then a Levite religious man showed up. He also avoided the injured man. A Samaritan travelling in the road came on him. When he saw the man's condition, his heart went out to him. He gave him first aid, disinfecting and bandaging his wounds. Then he lifted him onto his donkey, led him to an inn, made him comfortable. In the morning, he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, "Take good care of him. If it costs any more, put it on my bill. I'll pay you on my way back." What do you think? Which of these 3 became a neighbour to the man attacked by robbers? The one who treated him kindly, the religion scholar responded. Jesus said, "Go and do the same." The next story is the story of the lost sheep. By this time, a lot of men and women of doubtful reputation were hanging around Jesus, listening intently. The Pharisees and religion scholars were not pleased, not at all. They growled, "He takes in sinners and eats meals with them, treating them like old friends." Their grumbling triggered this story. Suppose one of you had 100 sheep and lost one. Wouldn't you leave the 99 in the wilderness and go and look after the lost one till you found it? When found, you can be sure you would put it across your shoulders, rejoicing, and when you got home, call in your friends and neighbours, saying, "Celebrate with me, I found my lost sheep." Count on it. There's more joy in heaven over one sinner's rescued life than over 99 good people in no need of rescue. Last one is from Matthew. "Or God's kingdom is like a fish net cast into the sea, catching all kinds of fish. When it is full, it is hauled onto the beach. The good fish are picked out and put in a tub. Those unfit to eat are thrown away. That's how it will be when the curtain comes down on history. The angels will come and cull the bad fish and throw them into the garbage. There will be a lot of desperate complaining, but it won't do any good." Jesus asked, "Are you starting to get a handle on all this?" They answered, "Yes." He said, "Then you see how every student well trained in God's kingdom is like the owner of a general store who can put his hands on anything you need, old or new, exactly when you need it." This is the word of the Lord.
Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Okay, the theme for today is parables. What is a parable? How many parables did Jesus tell? How did Jesus tell parables? Have we sometimes been the characters in his parables? This morning we will visit a few of his parables, and together we will listen to what it is that he is saying to us through his parables. What is a parable? A parable is a simple story used to illustrate a moral or spiritual lesson as told by Jesus in the Gospels. Parables are not merely clever stories, but proclamations of the Gospel inviting a decision. Parables are usually a short, fictionless story that illustrates a moral or religious principle. A parable is an illustrative story by which a familiar idea is cast beside an unfamiliar idea in such a way that the comparison helps to better understand and grasp the unfamiliar idea. The word parable comes from the Greek word parabol. In the Greek, para means beside, and bol means to cast or throw, to cast alongside. Are the interpretations of parables complicated? No, they are mostly extremely simple and never really complicated. How many parables did Jesus tell? I looked on page 1503 in my HighQuest NIV Quest Bible, and it listed about 40. Seven of them are in Matthew, Mark and Luke, all the same stories, and the others are a mixture of one or two of the other Gospels. Why did Jesus tell parables? Jesus was an artist in the telling of parables. He painted vivid word pictures to dramatise his teachings. Jesus told his parables in such a way that they were easy to visualise and thus to remember. When we think of parables, we think of the rural parables. We think of the agricultural parables. We think of the sower and the farmer, and the seed and the weeds and the plants. Those elements are in some of the parables, but Jesus had a broad audience and he cast his parables in different contexts. He spoke of some of them in metropolitan terms, with the judge in one of his parables, which would have appealed to a city person, a person who lived in a town. There was a Pharisee and a tax collector in the temple, and that was set geared for an urban audience, more than a rural one. Then there were banks and talents and earnings and investments. They would have appealed to a business person rather than a farmer. He could have just told a story or come out and spoken the truth in didactic form. He could have just stated the truth in one or two sentences, but he chose not to communicate that way. Most of the time, he chose to package the truth in the form of a story, in the form of a narrative, in the form of a parable. In parables, it's important to understand that there are certain features that carry the moral point. Other details are there simply to make the story vivid, memorable, and complete in the mind's eye of those that listen to it. I was sitting outside on Thursday afternoon having a cup of tea and flicking through a gardening magazine after work. And on the inside back page, there was an article called The Big Picture. And this is what it said. One of Australia's grand old dames of gardening used to take visitors around her truly lovely garden by exactly the same route every time. At a predetermined point, she'd make sure that everyone's attention was drawn in a specific direction. And then, at just the right moment, swing around 180 degrees to reveal an entirely new and unexpected vista to gasps of delight and surprise from her guests. It worked every time. That reminded me of how Jesus told parables, maybe. Setting the stage, the scene, and then somehow turning things around and sometimes upside down. Jesus had a way of using the language applicable to those he was telling his parables to. Let's look at the parable of the net in Matthew. Well, we heard that before. This story is sometimes overlooked. However, of all the parables, it is probably one that made most immediate sense to Jesus's fishermen friends. The sorting of a catch of fish would have been a common sight on the shores of Galilee. Galilee contained many types of fish in its water, as well as other sorts of sea creatures that might have been caught in a dragnet. A dragnet was long and hung from floats just beneath the water's surface. It was held in place by two boats that slowly hauled it to the shore. This might help to explain why Andrew and Peter needed to work with James and John in partnership to get a good catch. Jesus is comparing the mixed catch of fish to the way all sorts were being welcomed into the kingdom of God. It was a real international, multicultural and interfaith collection of people from all walks of life. Any sorting out of this mix, though, only comes later and is not the church's responsibility. The last judgment is outside its remit and in the hands of heaven, the angels. Christians all too readily set themselves up as the judges of who are insiders and who are the outsiders, and this is not their job. The parable ends with a frightening image of judgment that Jesus, like many a great storyteller, think maybe the Grimm brothers, fairy tales, is using deliberately shocking language to capture the audience's attention. What matters is, what sort of fish will we be? This is what Jesus urgently wants us to consider. This particular parable I told as part of Messy Church last Saturday afternoon. The children, as one of the Messy Church activities, created a wonderful picture, great big giant picture of fish and other creatures in a large net. And just to remind them of the story, I had this giant remote-controlled fish that just appeared at the end of the story, and we followed that fish out for our fish and chip supper. So it was just another way of, you know, putting that word fish just so that they would think of fish and parable together. I had a little girl ask me after dinner, how will I know what sort of fish I am? And I replied, if you always do the right thing, then you will be a good fish. And you know, that's all she needed for the answer. She turned and went away. And that's probably all we need for an answer as well. There were lots of fishermen in Jesus' days, and everyone would have known at least one fisherman and would have heard stories and known of the life of a fisherman and what it entailed. Jesus, surely the best of communicators, almost always chose stories as the way to captivate his audiences. I read a book titled Messy Parables, that stories are every bit as powerful and effective as the best sermons, however well their teaching is presented. In fact, stories often do a better job, as all speakers will testify that they receive feedback on what was said. It is invariably the story that is remembered long after the bullet points on the screen have been forgotten. Jesus very often in his stories drew on existing themes in the Jewish scriptures, such as shepherds and sheep, sibling rivalry, and the care of vineyards, but to which he then introduced new elements and unexpected twists that made the stories unique and which took his audiences into unexplored territory. They were a captivating mix of the familiar and of the unknown. Jesus used his special stories to challenge his listeners to think again about life and death, about heaven and hell, about themselves and their neighbours, and about the ways of the world and those of the kingdom of heaven. And you know, we are all invited to do the same for our generation, using the gift of all these stories, these parables, to help new audiences hear and respond to God's call to put their trust in him. Another parable, the Good Samaritan, I told that as well last Saturday. Just over there, I dumped three bags of sand on the floor. And then I had a couple of rolled up blankets and we made those into the hills and we pretended that Jerusalem was up on the hill. And then I had a bag of rocks, and we made a little path through the sand, and we had to make sure it went down to Jericho, because that's where the parable was set. I remember while sitting in the sand, as the children were running their fingers through the grains, I was doing all the actions as the traveller was being bashed up and robbed, as he was being kicked and hit and slapped and punched. Some of those little faces were fixed. They were really in the moment. And when I asked, "Do you know what happened next?" they said, "No. What?" And I completed the story. After dinner, following the storytelling, one of the mums came up to me and said, "Thanks for the storytelling. I learnt something tonight. Something that I never knew in the story of the Good Samaritan. And I wanted to say thank you to you." She said she'd never connected that the person who was the Samaritan had actually come from Samaria. You never know how a story or a parable will connect with someone when you're sharing it. What is it that is so special about these short stories drawn from everyday life in first century Palestine? And who do we, and why do we still use them today? And why can they still entertain, inspire, and challenge audiences in the 21st century with as much power as they once did to the farmers and the fishermen of Galilee long ago? When Jesus told parables, his parables were more than quaint stories about everyday life. Once you start looking at them seriously, you can't help but notice that they are full of impossible and disturbing things, such as the shepherd who leaves 99 of his best sheep for the sake of one silly one that wandered off, or a father who is foolish enough to give his lazy and wayward son half the family inheritance well before it was due, or traditional enemies who never normally acknowledged each other, ending up helping and being helped on the road to Jericho. When analysed properly, these special stories are both disturbing and countercultural for the audiences at the time, unsettling them into considering truths about God and heaven in the way that would never have been heard if truths had been shared more directly. It's for this very reason that Jesus tells his followers what they need to hear through parables. However, for those who sincerely want to find out more, for those whose appetites have been stimulated by the parables and who have begun to see something beyond the story, Jesus was always prepared to explore the meaning. His parables are designed to make people think. They may start in the world of the familiar, but then, by including a disturbing twist, they get people thinking afresh and wanting to find out more. Let's have a look at a parable, a video clip that I found on YouTube. Thank you. I really liked that because after finding that, I thought it really is possible to hear a parable without any words at all. Jesus was not just a storyteller. He was a master of the craft of storytelling. He knew how to control a crowd. He knew how to ruffle a few feathers. And oftentimes in his ministry, he did. He had a heart for people, for the marginalised, for the poor, for the downtrodden, for widows, for orphans, the blind and the lame and the deaf and the leper. And he had a heart for telling parables, stories that could get inside the heads of his listeners, stories that could get inside the hearts of his listeners. Parables, more than a story, more than just storytelling, more than anything, a way of sharing God's love with the world. Amen. I want to encourage you, when you get home, maybe during the week, look up some of the parables. Read them through a few times. And then get in contact with someone else that's here and have a discussion about them. And see the different things that different eyes and different ears see inside the parables. I think we're going to sing now, aren't we?